Good morning. Today's daf in Pesachim Kuf Tes. We are on Kuf Ches Amud Beis here in the 10th parak of Pesachim. Dal Kosos. Yesterday we had a discussion regarding the Dal Kosos. We spoke about Heseba during the Dal Kosos, the suffix of Rav Nachman, whether the Heseba of the Dal Kosos should be for the first two cups or for the last two cups, and a number of other issues regarding the mitzvah of a seba in of itself, and then as it relates to dal kosos. Women are obligated in dal kosos. That came up in yesterday's daf. And the Gemara rattled off four halachas as it relates to dal kosos. One is a shear that needs to be a revius. Number two, it has to be diluted. If you drink it undiluted, so you are your yotze mitzvah, but you did not do it. You did not do it ideally. You have to separate the dal kosos into the sections of the Haggadah. You can't have the dal kosos in one shot. And you can give some of your kos to some people and your children, but you have to drink rov kos. Okay, those are the halachas that we went over yesterday, and another halacha, which is ideally the kos should be made up of red wine. Okay, the Gemara, we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. Kuf Ches Amud Beis on Rabbanan. We are now three lines from the bottom of Kuf Ches Amud Beis. Akol Chayav Barba Kosos Halalu. Echad Anashim VeEchad Nashim VeEchad Tinoko. So everybody's obligated in Dal Kosos. So that would be men, women, and also children as well. I'm Rav Yehuda V'chim Matavalos Yesh L'Tinokos B'Yayin. So Rav Yehuda says, I don't understand. What exactly are you benefiting? What are you gaining from giving a child wine? So Ela Mechalkim Behem Klaus Ve'egos Nebar of Pesach. So what you're going to do is that you're going to distribute roasted grains and nuts on Erev Pesach, Kadesh Lo Yishanu, so that the children don't fall asleep. Yishalu, and they're going to ask questions. Amar Lava Rabbi Akiva. Now they said regarding Rabbi Akiva. Now we have two girsos, either Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Tarfon. Shayimach Mechalek Klaus Ve'egos Nebar of Tinokos Erev Pesach, that they would distribute roasted grains and nuts on to the children in Erev Pesach, Kadesh Lo Yishanu. Basically, they don't fall asleep. They still are interested in the Seder, and they ask questions. A couple of things over here, more than a couple. Number one, go back to our Tosfos. Tosfos in the beginning of the Perek, Tzadi Tesamud Beis, and Tosfos over there raises a question. I know we went over this yesterday, but it's such a fundamental question, and Tosfos himself really struggles to at an answer. And that is that the mitzvah of Dal Kosos. So is it the Baal Bais is going to be drinking each one of the four cups and everyone's going to be yotzei by just watching the Baal Bais do so? And Tosos argues, remember Tosos on Tzadi Tesamud Beis? It's the third to last Tosos. And what everyone else is going to do is they're going to watch and they're going to be yotzei by watching. Now, how exactly does that work? So we know how that works. It operates through Shomei Kohanim. And Tosos says it's no different than Kiddush. We have the same thing regarding Kiddush. By Kiddush on Friday night, so the Baal Bais makes Kiddush, everyone listens, and everyone watches the Baal Bais drink. Yeah, he gives out the yain, but that's not essential, right? It's a kosher bracha. Everyone will drink, have a little sip of the kosher bracha, or wine from the kosher bracha, but that's not ma'akev. So maybe it's the same thing. Or on the other hand, what Tosfos suggests is that I need every participant of the Seder to have a kos. In other words, Dal Kosos requires that everyone drinks of the Dal Kosos. That's Tosfos' question. Back on Tzadi Tesamud Beis, and without going through the Tosfos and Tzadi, he literally pinballs back and forth between which is the correct way to view the mitzvahs of Dal Kosos. One of the Gemara he quotes in arguing that everybody needs to have a Kos is our Gemara that we just learned right now. The Brisa that we just saw together, the Brisa says, Hakol Chayav and Barba Kosos. Everyone's obligated in the Dal Kosos, and that's men, and that's women, that's children. So Tosfos says it seems to be a pretty strong raya that each and every person that participates in the Seder has got to have a kos in front of them and has to drink, everybody has to drink four cups of wine. So that's Tosfos' argument. Seems to be a really good raya. Of course, you can counter argue, but anyway, it's such a fundamental point. And in the Gemaras, right, as we go through all these Gemaras over here as it relates to the Dal Kosos, so now we get to see the Gemaras inside and just revisit that question of Tosfos. That's number one. Number two is there's a really interesting machlokas over here in the Brisa between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda in terms of whether or not children should be receiving Dal Kosos. Okay, so aside from we're not talking about the social ills of children drinking, which is obviously a really serious issue, but just the idea that we're having a machlokas whether children are obligated to drink wine or not. So you see the Rashbam on the bottom of the previous Amud? So the Rashbam says, what's the argument you're going to make that children should be obligated? So the Rashbam argues, it's a short Rashbam, but it's really significant. Shigam Haim Nigalu. So the Rashbam writes, because they also experienced, Geula. What the Rashbam seems to be arguing is that much like we say that women are obligated, even though it's a time-bound mitzvah that normally women would be exempt from, but women would be obligated because af hein hayu ba'oso anes. So what the Rashbam is presenting as an argument on behalf of the Tanakhama is that effectively we're going to say the same thing. That because af hein hayu ba'oso anes would also obligate children as well. Now that's, in of itself, that's already interesting. And where else do we find this? Meaning, where else do we find this idea of af hein hayu ba'oso anes is going to obligate children? We don't have that by Chanukah Ner, and we don't have that by Purim and Megillah. So this idea that the children should be drinking dal kosos because af hein hayu ba'oso anes, that in of itself is interesting. Also, what the Gemara never clarifies in this position, the Tanakhama, that children are obligated in dal kosos, is that we're talking about a katan shehigia lechinuch, or are we talking about a katan shelo higia lechinuch? The Gemara does not make that point clear. And really, of course, you can argue in one of two directions. You can argue that we're talking about a katan shehigia lechinuch, but if that's true, so then there's chinuch. So then the obligation of chinuch would kick in. Or maybe you can counter argue and say no. Normally we say the mitzvah of chinuch kicks in, but we're talking about wine over here, and maybe it's not so prudent to start introducing wine at such a young age. Okay, so that part obviously needs clarification. And the counter argument of Rav Yehuda, again going back to the Rashbam in the previous Ambon, so the Rashbam explains that according to Rav Yehuda, children are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of dal kosos. What's that predicated on? So the Rashbam writes, halo peturim min mitzvos, because generally speaking, we know that children are not yet obligated in mitzvah. So the way the Rashbam understands it, it certainly seems to be that we're talking about a katan shelo higia lechinuch. That's what it sounds like from that second Rashbam over there. Okay, so that's just a couple of really short punctuated points. Another thing to take into consideration is the following. Look at the Rashbam on the top of the Amud Aleph, where he writes, he makes a couple points over here. One is that roasted grains, you're going to be distributing that to the children on Lo Pesach. So first of all, part of clarification, the roasted grains are not chametz. In other words, we've gone over this numerous times, but it bears repeating. Chametz is when you take grain and water, and you let it sit together, and the grain rises. In other words, the process of chametz, a fermentation. Over here, if I just take a grain and I roast the grain and now it's a roasted kernel, so that's fine. It's not chametz. That part is, at this point in the Masechta, that's obvious. A couple things to take into consideration. The Rashbam first reminds us that it has to be grains of the previous year, meaning it has to be yashan, it can't be chadash. Okay. And mind you, by the way, on the Seder night, so that's really old grain, meaning any grains that grew this season are still going to be chadash and still going to be aser. So it's got to be grains that carried over from last year. But the truth of the matter is the matzah has to be made up of the same grains as well. But okay, anyway, and then he writes umekomos yesh bisfarad. And look at the third line of the Rashbam over here. He describes minhagim that were in Spain. Now the Rashbam obviously. Right, one of the original Ashkenazim, a grandson to Rashi. But he's hearing, right, while in France, he's hearing what's going on in Spain, obviously. In other words, there clearly was communication between various Jewish communities, and the Rashbam is describing a minhag that took place in Spain. And now this minhag that he's describing is 800 years old. Shemiyavshin chitim yishanim emachvas al gabe aor. So what they would do is they would take chitim yishanim, old grain, but you understand halachically, meaning from last season, not from this, not from the season that had just passed. And they would grill it on the pan, but in other words, I guess dry grill it on a pan of ochlo sam im egozim bikinuch seuda. And they would eat it together with nuts as part of a dessert. And so that was a minhag. He's describing what they would do in general. He's describing what they would do on the Seder night. And not clear, but in other words, this idea of roasted grains being almost like a dessert food. So 800 years ago in Spain, that used to be the minhag. Okay, anyway, let's go back to the Gemara. We are on Kuf Tes Amud Aleph. We're four lines down. Tanya, the Gemara quotes another brisa. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Chotfei Matzos. So what we do is that we are going to translate literally. We're going to grab matzahs on the Seder night, so that way the children don't fall asleep. Okay, over here, what does that mean? They're grabbing matzah. The Rashbam over here offers three different possible explanations of what it means that we're grabbing the matzah. And the Rambam, by the way, offers another explanation on top of that. So see the second Rashbam over here on the Amud Chod v'matzah, and he writes, Magbim asakara bishvatino kishi yishalom, we're going to lift the plate. Now, the Gemara later on is going to describe this at the beginning of the Seder, so you lift the Seder plate. Okay, and the instructions are given, they're in the Haggadah. Just follow instructions. But where do those instructions come from? So according to the first pshat of the Rambam, it comes right here from our Gemara. Meaning chot v'matzvah doesn't mean grab, but it means lift. And basically what you want to do is you want to do strange things at the Seder night. What exactly are you doing? You're lifting the plate? Yeah, exactly. So in other words, once you inspire questioning, that's part of the goal of the Seder night. So that's one pshat in the Rashbam. The Rashbam offers a second pshat, drop one line down. Chot v'matzvah ochlin maher. What you're going to do is that you're going to eat really quickly. And by eating really quickly, so what's that going to accomplish? So what it's going to accomplish is that the children see that we're rushing to get to the end. Meaning basically we want the children to know that don't fall asleep now. We have benching, we have challah coming up. So we're rushing through the meal. That presumably is what's going on over here. So that is a second possibility. Now, it's a little bit challenging because what does that mean? We're rushing through the meal. The meal comes after Magid. So does that mean also that we're going to rush through Magid as well? Okay. Again, everybody's Seder is different. There's no uniformity in the Seder. It's the text is standardized, but pace and various menhagim are going to be different. And yeah, some people do. Okay. I've heard stories. I'm not going to share them right now in terms of, whatever. People in the know, so some of them do in fact rush through the Maggid section. Most homes do not rush through the Maggid section. But anyway, so that's a second possibility. So that talks about basically all this, everything comes out to the same point, meaning the same goal. And that is to keep the kids interested and invested in the Seder. So either you're going to do strange acts or you're going to rush through the meal. There is a third pshat offered here in the Rashbam, drop down another like three lines. A third pshat of the Rashbam is don't let the kids eat too much, right? Eat too much and you're going to get tired. You're going to want to fall asleep, right? Just reference any Shabbos meal that we have. So we eat too much, or speaking for myself, and then you want to take a nap afterwards. So that's something that you should do. So chotfin matzah, you grab the matzah away from them, meaning obviously eat the requisite amount, but don't eat too much. Okay, that's a third pshat. And the fourth pshat, which the Rambam says, which probably the most popular pshat, if you will, of the Gemara over here, and that is grab matzahs one from another. In other words, play a little bit of a game with the matzah, right? Steal the matzah, right? Minhagim in, I would say, most homes, hiding the afikomen, basically making a game of the matzah. So that's the Rambam's understanding over here. And what you do is you make a game of it. And again, that'll keep the kids interested and invested. And that's a fourth possible pshat in the Gemara over here of what it means to be chotef matzahs, to grab the matzahs. Tanya, we're back in the Gemara. Amar olav al Rabbi Akiva miyamavlo amar higia islamo bebeis amedrash chutz me'avri psochem ve'erev yom ha-kippurim. So there were two times where Rabbi Akiva closed the doors of the Beis Medrash, meaning Beis Medrash was open 363 days of the year. 2 days he would close the doors of the Beis Medrash, tell everybody to go home. One would be Erev Pesach and the other one would be Erev Yom Kippur. And the Gemara goes on to explain Erev Pesach, Bishvil Tinokos Kedei Sheli Shanu. So as far as Erev Pesach is concerned, so that the children don't fall asleep. And Erev Yom Kippur, Kedei Sheyachilem Es Bnei Emen. And Erev Yom Kippur, because we want to make sure that everybody has a meal. You got to eat an Erev Yom Kippur. It's a mitzvah to eat an Erev Yom Kippur. And obviously it's preparation for fasting on Yom Kippur. So you want to make sure that everyone eats. So Rabbi Kiba would close the door in Erev Yom Kippur, the doors of the Beis Medrash, so everyone would go home and feed their families on Erev Yom Kippur. Erev Yom Kippur is quite understandable, meaning that's the time where everyone's going to be having a meal. So therefore, Rabbi Kiba closed the doors of the Beis Medrash. Erev Pesach, what exactly do you need the fathers to be home for an Erev Pesach? What? So that they could tuck their kids in the afternoon so they have a nap? Okay, so maybe yes, but Tosfos doesn't appreciate that. Tosfos doesn't think that's the correct pshat. What the way Tosfos understands it is that the girsa in our Gemara is slightly off. In our Gemara, the girsa we had is Arve Psachim. So you take a look at the top Tosfos on the Amud, he prefers the girsa of Lele Psachim. Meaning in Erev Pesach, Beis Medrash is open, people are there, people are learning in the Beis Medrash on Erev Pesach. And the kids, they could take a nap all for themselves. But when it comes to the Lala Seder, I know it's hard for us to imagine, but yeah, you have Masmidim. And the Masmidim are there in the Beis Medrash, and if we don't close the doors of the Beis Medrash, so they're not gonna go home right away. And they'll go home a little bit later that evening, and they'll start the Seder a little bit later. So Rabbi Kiva did not want that. So Rabbi Akiva closed the doors, not on Erev Pesach, but on Leil Pesach, so that people would be home and starting the Seder right away at the first opportunity. Right? We talked about this in the beginning of the Perek as well. If I could reference another Tosfos that we did in the beginning of the Perek. So the Tosfos Achetechshach, so Tosfos over there points out that the Seder has to start Balayla, has to start at nighttime, as opposed to Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontiv. You could start a meal early. Erev Shabbos, you can make Shabbos early. You can have your Suda Shabbos early. But when it comes to Erev Pesach, so the Seder has to start Balayla. Not only does the eating have to start Balayla, but the first Kiddush has to be starting also Balayla. So it's a balance. It's a delicate balance. On one hand, you want to start the Seder right away. On the other hand, the Seder can't start until Laila, until Tzeisa Kochavim. So, okay, but the point is that once Tzeisa Kochavim comes, so at that point in time, there's no delay, meaning you should be starting the Seder right at the gate. And that's what that's the way Tosfos understands the Gemara over here in terms of when Rabbi Akiva would close the doors of the Beis Medrash. Not the afternoon, but rather nighttime. So that everybody's at home ready to start the Seder punkt at seis. Tana Rabbanan, we're continuing the Gemara. Kuf Tesamad Aleph. Chayv Adam L'Samech Banav V'Mnei Beisel Berego. Simchas Yantav. So here we're going to get treated in today's daf to just a short couple of lines regarding the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. So there's a mitzvah, Samachta B'chagecha, Parshas Re'ei. So we have to be happy on Yom Tov. I know the Litvox among us are going to really appreciate this, but the Vilna Gaon is quoted as saying numerous times that the hardest mitzvah in the Torah is to be happy for 7 consecutive days. Right? I know the Sephardim in the audience really enjoy hearing that. It's not easy for us Ashkenazim. But meanwhile, so there's a mitzvah of simcha. So good, there's a mitzvah of simcha. So how does that manifest itself? So we're going to see in our Gemara right now a couple of lines dedicated to this topic. So chayav adam l'samech banav v'nei beisel berego. So there's a mitzvah, and it's the Baal HaBayis responsibility to provide simcha for his wife, for his children. Shenemar v'samachta b'chagecha. So there has to be a simcha over the course of Yontif. So bamem misamcham. So what is the way in which simcha is going to be achieved by yayin? So according to the Tanakhama, it's going to be done through wine. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Anashim Barayilam and Anashim Barayilam, and Rabbi Yehuda says no, you're not going to take one brush and use that for everybody's simcha. Everybody's simcha is going to be subjective. It's not objective. Anashim Barayilam b'yayin. So as far as this is now the Gemara explaining the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. That's the way the Rashbam understands it. Meaning the Rabbi Yehuda's shita in the Braisa ends with just simply men for what's appropriate, women for what's appropriate. And now the Gemara explains, Anashim Barai Lehem B'Yayin. So for as far as men is concerned, so yes, we're back to wine for men. And Nashim Emai, and what about women? So Tini Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef goes on to explain, B'Baba B'Big Dei Tzivonim, so in Bavo. So it would be new clothing, right? Clothing of color. And Baruch Yisrael Big Dei Pishtad Meguatzim. And in Eretz Yisrael, so the mode of dress over there is linen garments that were pressed really nicely. So brand new clothing for the women. Tosfos over here, much discussed Tosfos. So fourth Tosfos on the Amud. So the Gemara gives the answer of wine. That's the simcha. We're going to see another Bryce in just a second that's going to reinforce this idea that simcha comes through wine. Tosfos says, what about the Karbanos that are offered on Yontif? What about the Karban Simcha that's offered on Yontif when we start Masechet Chagiga? So we're going to learn that every single Yontif, so there are three Karbanos that are obligated by Jews. One of them is the Olas Riyah, and number two is the Shami Chagiga, and the other one is Shami Simcha. Meaning there is a Karban that's offered on Yontif specifically for the purpose of Simcha. So what about the Karban? So Bamem Masechet B'Yayin, so Tosfos writes over here, Hainu B'Zman Hazeh. So Tosfos writes that our Gemara over here describing wine and new clothing as methods of simcha. That's talking about nowadays when there's no Beis HaMikdash. But in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we have very clear instructions by the Torah in terms of how to achieve simcha, and that's specifically through the karbanos and through the eating of meat. Presumably, Tosfos is talking about over here the basar of the karban. Okay, so much discussion in terms of how simcha takes on new forms after Churban Beis HaMikdash and after we no longer have the Shamei Simcha. Okay, we'll stop here in terms of But there's much more to discuss within that Tosfos. We're back in the Gemara. Tanya, halfway down on Kuf Tesam and Aleph. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bezerra Omer, Bezman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayam, Ein Simcha Ela Bebasar. The Tosfos' point over here seems to be very clearly stated in the Gemara. So in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so in terms of a Kiyama Simcha, that comes to me, Shenemar V'Zavachta Shlamim V'Achalta Sham, V'Samachta L'Tanei Hashem Elkecha. Okay, so it's simple pshat in the Psukim. Although the truth of the matter is that contextually the Torah is not really describing Yantav, but okay, Tosfos raises that point. But anyway, so the Achshav She'ein Beis HaMikdash Kayim Ein Simcha Ela B'Yayin. But now in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, so Simcha comes through wine. She'nemer V'Yayin Yisamach Levavenish, the Pasuk in Tehillim, describing how wine provides a Simcha. Okay, Adkan. Okay, so that's it. That's all we get from the Gemara in terms of the mitzvah of Simcha, Simchas Yantav. Obviously, a lot more to discuss regarding the development and the evolution of Simcha as it goes from a time of the Beis HaMikdash to a post Churban period of time. We are going to continue in the Gemara. The Gemara over here on Kuf Tesam and Aleph now is going to be discussing the shear of wine. Okay, this is going to be a really interesting Gemara, very little mathematical, a little technical. But basically, the Gemara is going to try to the best of its ability to help us know what is the volume necessary to drink in terms of a kosher yayin. Meaning, we know that what the shear is. The shear is a revius of a log. How much is the revius of a log? So you open up any modern halachic work, and you're going to see a range. Meaning, it's going to be very hard to ascertain exactly what the volume is. And the Gemara is going to try to give it to us as many different ways as possible. The Gemara is going to talk in terms of volume. The Gemara is going to measure it in terms of a cubic linear measurement. The Gemara is really going to try to help us, but despite the fact that the Gemara spent so much time helping us, but in terms of actually turning these measurements into a practical measurement that we all know and can see and can quantify, it still serves as a challenge to us to give perfect quantities regarding how much a revius is. Every one of the cups has to be a revius. Again, the Rashbam in yesterday's daf made this point really clear, that back in the time of the Gemara, so their wines were very thick and required a dilution. The ratio of dilution was 3 parts water to 1 part wine. So in the time of the Gemara, how much actual wine did you need for each one of the cups? You actually only needed a quarter of a revius. Because then what you're going to do is that for that 1/4 of a revius, you're then going to add 3 parts water, and then the sum total of that drink is going to be a revius. That's what the Rashbam said in yesterday's daf. Okay, but meanwhile, so good. So how much is that? What volume wise? How much is that? So the Gemara is going to again try to be as helpful as possible. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Kasta de Marisa de Hava Pitzipori, he havas kimin luga de mekasha ba misharim revius shal Pesach. So if you take some sort of measuring spoon that was used for the fish brine, so in the town of Tzipori, there was a known measuring instrument which they would use for the fish brine, and that was the volume of a log. And you take now that measurement of wine, break that up into four parts, and there you get the 4 cups of wine for the dalkoso. So if you have that instrument, it's extraordinarily helpful. The Gemara gives us a second way of measuring a revius. I'm Rav Yochanan Tamyasa, so some sort of measuring cup. So Kadmaisa Dahava Bitveria, the original one that was in Tveria, Havyasera Al Da. It's more than the current one. So there was an old measuring cup known as the Timnisa. Sorry for pronunciation. And it's larger than the current one. And how much is the discrepancy between them? Riv'ah. So it's 1/4 log. Ubamishar and Riviya Shal Pesach. And that's how you could measure the revius of the of a cup of wine for Pesach. Meaning, you take that discrepancy, and that is going to be the revius alog that one can use for Pesach. And again, really helpful if you have the measuring cup, both of Tveria, both the old one and the new one. Okay, interesting. In these two measuring guides that were given by the Gemara, one was in the town of Tzipor and the other one was in the town of Tveria, right? Not literally, but a throw stones away one from the other. Okay. So great. So if you lived in Tzipori or in Tveria, so approximately 1700 years ago, so this is very helpful information. Obviously for us, we don't have these measuring cups anymore. So not helpful to you and I, but certainly in the time of the Gemara, very helpful. I'm Rav Chista Revi Shal Torah Etzbaim Al Etzbaim Barom Etzbaim Bechatzi Etzba Vechomesh Etzba. So now the Gemara says, okay, so I'll give you a way of measuring a revius. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a cubic measurement. And it's going to be two etzbaos by two etzbaos. And etzba is the width of a finger. Which finger? So presumably it's going to be the width of the thumb. It's approximately an inch. So it's going to be 2 inches by 2 inches by 2.7 inches. So you take that cubic measurement. And that's going to be the revius. Now, how do we know that? Kitatanya. So the Gemara says, well, really, all you need to do know is just simply one cubic measurement, and then just do the ratio. V'rachatz b'mayim is called besaro. So here, a brisa. We've seen this brisa numerous times throughout Shas. Comes up a couple times in Erevin. I'm looking at the side of the Gemara. Comes up a couple times in Erevin and Yuma Chagiga Sukkah. So this comes up numerous times throughout Shas. And that is the base amount necessary for a mikvah. The Torah says that in order to go into the mikvah, your whole body has to go into the mikvah. V'rachatz b'mayim es kol besaro. Sholo yedav rechotz es bein besaro l'mayim. So a couple of halachas. So number one, the halacha of chatzitza. There cannot be any kind of barrier separating the water from your skin. The water has to make contact with every part of your external skin. B'mayim b'mei mikvah. It has to go into water. It has to go into collected rainwater. Es kol besaro, mayim shekol gufo l'mayim. Your whole body has to go into the mikveh at one time, meaning it has to be enough water so that your entire body can be submerged under the water one time. V'kamahein. And how much is that? So here we go now. We are going to be given we're going to be given both cubic measurements from a linear standpoint, and also we're going to be giving a volume measurement. Amal ama barom shalosh ama. So the minimum amount of water where an entire body can be submerged in that water is going to be 1 amma by 1 amma by 3 ammas. V'shiru chachamim shir kol mikvah arba im sa'a. And that translates to 40 sa'a. So now what we have is our starting point. Our starting point is that 1 amma by 1 amma by 3 ammas in terms of a linear measurement is equal to 40 sa'a. So now what you're going to do, and you could see Rashi and the Rashbam, both take a lot of time just basically going through the math and basically now saying, well, once we know that, so once we now reduce and we know the measurements, once we reduce the 40 saw down to a revius of log, and once we reduce the linear measurement, so it comes out now that the linear measurement for a revius of a log is going to be 2 etzbaos by 2 etzbaos by 2.7 etzbaos. Okay. I'm going to give all of us a pass in terms of doing the math right now, but it works. The numbers work out in terms of the ratio. A couple of points over here. Number one, the minimum dimensions of a mikvah so that an average person can be submerged in the mikvah is going to be 1 amma by 1 amma by 3 ammas. We have many gemaras that describe the idea that the width of an average human being is going to be 1 amma. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Meaning an amma is basically from the bend of your elbow all the way to the tip of your middle finger. It's anywhere in the range of 1.5 to 2 feet. So basically, you run that against your body, and that's basically the width of your body. Right? And I understand that the Gemara over here says an amma by an amma. So the width of a body is an amma, but what about when you're going basically from heel to toe? Is that also an amma? It's a little bit less. Okay, maybe it accounts for the stomach. Not sure, but anyway, that is now the width of a person being an amma. And the Gemara and Sukkah, we're going to talk about basically when you're trying to figure out how many people could sit around a table. So every person is basically an amma. No social distancing over there, but everybody takes up an amma, and you can have, for 6 ammas, you can have 6 people sitting side by side. Okay. Admittedly, not that comfortably, but, you know, almost like an airplane. The airplanes have basically done the math for us. Anyway, But the height of a person, so this we've gone over numerous times, and let's go over it again. So it sounds like from the Gemara that the height of the average person, 3 amas. Okay, now, right, I do suffer a little bit of being vertically challenged, but the idea that the average height of a person is 3 amas, so there seems to be Gemaras that do not present that the average height of a person is 3 amas. In fact, Tosfos points out that the average height of a person typically is 4 amas, or maybe just a little bit under 4 amas. So Tosfos over here, Tosfos in a number of places in Shas, says this, but Tosfos over here says, that when we say that a person's height is 3 amas, we mean up to the shoulders. Meaning from foot to shoulder, a person's height is 3 amas. And it doesn't count the head. Well, that's a little bit strange. If it doesn't count the head, so how is your whole body being submerged in the mikvah? And Tosfos gives the answer, which you probably already figured out, and that, of course, is displacement. Right? Displacement is really the answer, meaning when your body goes into the water, so the height of the water at its starting point is going to be 3 amas, but once you're introducing your body into the water, obviously, the displacement is going to have the water rise, so that your head would be submerged. Anyway, that's Tosfos over here, that the 3 ama height of a person is only up to the shoulders, it does not include the head. And again, there are a lot of proofs that would seem to indicate that. This is, in fact, the case. Okay, so the Adkanya. So that's good for our purposes over here. As we all know, in terms of a revia, so as much as the Gemara tries to help us, like, really pin down what is the quantity of a revia, but it's hard to know. And the truth of the matter is over the years, various poskim over the years, try to measure the revias, both in terms of the linear measurement that was given to us, and also there are other ways to measure it as well. Meaning our Gemara is really not the only way of measuring revias. There's also ways of measuring it in terms of the volume of the eggs and obviously the volumes of olives. So it's a bit of an avoda to figure out exactly what the current revias is. And there's basically a range. And every time I say over the Gemara, so it's approximately 4 ounces. Obviously, that's somewhere in the middle of the range. It's not it's not the small shear. It's not the largest shear. Okay, we're continuing in the Gemara. Amar Rav Ashi, we're on Kuf Tes Amud Beis, 3 lines down. Amar Li Rav Bar China Shulchan Shel Mikdash Shel Parakim Ava. The Shulchan of the Beis Hamikdash, right? We just went over this in Parshas Tetzaveh, actually Parshas Truma. We're going to be going over it again in this week's Parsha Vayakol Pekudei. So the Shulchan, the measurement of the Shulchan. So the Gemara says that it must be that it's not one solid piece. Why? The Isa Gadacha Aduka Hava Mehadeg Amta Baamta Hechem Mitbalei. Look. The smallest mikvah we just identified as being 1 amah by 1 amah by 3 amahs. And now what are you going to take? You're going to take the shulchan and put it into the mikvah. So the Gemara says, now how are you going to do that? Meaning it just doesn't fit into the mikvah, right? At the smallest side, the shulchan itself is 1 amah. But there's no way that shulchan is going to be able to fit into a mikvah. So the Gemara says, so it must be that it's disassembled. So the Gemara says, really, that's a strong argument. That's not such a strong argument. My kushya, Dilma be Yamsha Asa Shlomo. What about Yamsha Shlomo? So we've gone over this in Erevin. So the idea is that Shlomo built himself a significantly sizable mikvah. How big was it? Havamat bole. Didni Rabbi Chia, we learned in the Brisa Rabbi Chia, Yamsha Asa Shlomo. Mafzik mea vechamishim mikvah tahara. So the mikvah that was made by Shlomo HaMelech was 150 mikvahs, meaning it was 40 sa'ah times 150. That was the total volume of the Yamsha Shlomo. You remember the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Yudala? The Gemara took a lot of time going over the fact that we tried to match the volume that we just learned right now, that the mikvah of Shlomo HaMelech was 40 sa'ah times 150. And meanwhile, we also know the linear measurement of the Yamsha Shlomo, where it had a circumference of 100 amah. It had a diameter of 100 amah and had a circumference of 300, where it had the ratio between diameter circumference 1 to 3, which isn't exactly pi. And back in Erevin, we discussed that in more detail. But in meanwhile, however, the Gemara in Erevin went through the linear dimension and the Gemara spent a lot of time trying to match the linear dimension to the volume quantity that was just given over here and also given back in Erevin. Anyway, what comes out over here is that The Gemara says the Shulchan, there's a place to tovel the Shulchan in a really large mikvah that was made by Shlomo HaMelech. Okay. Let's start the next Gemara. We have some time. Let's start the next Gemara. And tomorrow's daf is, you know, most of these dafim here in the 10th parak have been really short and really bite-sized and able to do within the daf yomi format. But the Gemara, tomorrow's daf and Kuf Yud Aleph, and a little bit Kuf Yud Beis as well. So they're a little bit longer. A lot of Agadata coming up. Anyway, I'll give a brief introduction to the upcoming Gemara. Okay, tomorrow's daf is going to be a real challenge because no longer does it deal with the straightforward halacha, but it deals with issues that are more esoteric in nature. The basic idea, as simply as I understand it, and really my understanding of the Gemara's upcoming are extraordinarily simplistic, is that the number one, so that's echad, and that reminds us of Yichud Hashem. Right, the singularity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the uniqueness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. But once you go now to the number two, so that already now, that the number itself is it's keneged Echad. It really goes against the idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's uniqueness, his singularity, and so the number two, so there's an issue with the number two. Now, the Gemara is going to really subdivide this. We'll see this a lot more in tomorrow's daf. In terms of the various dangers that are contained in the number two. In terms of the mazikin, in terms of the kshafim. Now, you asked me, by the way, I just lumped the two together. What do I know the differences between the two? But we're going to see it clearly in tomorrow's daf. The Rashi already in the bottom of the Amud talks about this. The idea that there's mazikin and there's kshafim and they're not exactly the same. Anyway, the idea is that those things that come in pairs are not a good thing. Now, before anyone gets extraordinarily concerned about this, overly concerned about this, tomorrow's daf, we're going to get very clear instructions of the Gemara, which is don't be overly concerned about these things. The less you worry about them, the better it is. However, as we're going to see, I'm going to show you the Rashbam in tomorrow's daf. However, the Gemara obviously is going to dedicate precious real estate to this topic of to avoid pairs. It's something. Okay, to what degree is it something? So again, definitely should be minimized to the best of our ability, but clearly it's still a thing. And so with that small introduction, so the Gemara now is going to ask the following question. Lo yifchus ulo me'ar ba'ah. There's the mitzvah on the Seder night to have four cups of wine. Again, that was already pointed out in the first Mishnah. We're still within the first Mishnah. Right? First Mishnah was 10 blot ago. We're still in the first Mishnah. And the Gemara's question over here is really straightforward. Heich metakni rabbana mide da'asiba li de sakana. So why would the Chachamim do that? They would institute having four cups of wine. Four cups of wine is two pair. And why would the Chachamim do that? Institute something that would lead to a sakana. What's the sakana? The sakana is, it's pairs. It's an even number. At that time, you will learn to the Braisa, lo yochal adam trei, a person shouldn't eat in pairs. Velo yishte trei, shouldn't drink cups in pairs. Velo yikanech trei, and not wipe in pairs. Velo yaset tzrachav trei, nor be with his wife, multiple bias, but have them in pairs. So the Gemara is going to clarify those last two points in just a little bit. But the basic question of the Gemara is, how can the Chachamim institute that we have four cups of wine? Four cups of wine is two pair, and that's dangerous, says the Gemara. And I don't understand how the Chachamim could do that. It leads to a sakana. The Gemara is going to give three answers to this question. So this morning, we'll just run through the three answers, and tomorrow we'll cover this in much more detail. So Amar Rav Nachman Amakra Lo Shimurim Lel Hamishumar Uva Min Hamazikin. So the first answer of the Gemara that attributed to Rav Nachman is that the night of the Seder is Lel Shimurim. The Pasuk in Parshas Bo, in description of that night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that we're afforded extra protection. That extra protection afforded to us on the Seder night is going to provide us the necessary protection from any of the mazikin. That's answer number one provided by Rav Nachman. Answer number two, Rav Amar Koshal Bracha Mitzaref L'Tova Veinu Mitzaref L'Ra. Well, you know, included in the Dal Kosis is a Koshal Bracha, meaning we're going to be benching over a cup of wine. That benching over a cup of wine, that classifies as a Koshal Bracha. That's the way the Rashbam says it, right? I thought also the Koshal Kiddush is a Koshal Bracha. Okay, anyway, but the We're going from 4 to 3, so that's what the Gemara is doing right now. So I understand why the Rashbam says that the kosher bracha is benching, but I also thought Kiddush was a kosher bracha. But anyway, Rav Amar kosher bracha mitzarf l'tova veinim mitzarf l'ra. So you see, what you can't do is you can't count the kosher bracha towards that number 4, because a kosher bracha only helps you, can't hurt you. It's only mitzarf l'tova, not l'ra. And finally, the third answer of the Gemara, Ravina Amar abra kasei tikna rabbanan derech erus. And the third answer the Gemara provided by Ravina is that no, these 4 cups of wine are not part of, are not to be summed up together as 4 cups of wine. They are each one of them to be treated as individual cups. Every cup of wine represents its own individual mitzvah. And so therefore you do not collect them, count them up towards the number 4. It's each one of them is its own cup of wine. Certainly supportive of the minhag Ashkenaz. We spoke about this also early in the parak, the idea that each one of the cups of wine on the Seder night is a mitzvah be'apei nafshe. It's its own independent mitzvah. Minhag Ashkenaz is to make a bar prik oven in each one of the dalakosos. So you recall, we also spoke about this earlier in terms of whether or not the magid is considered a hefsek, meaning you made a bar prik oven on Kiddush. Then you went through magid. Now you can have your second cup of wine. Do you make another bar prayer guffin? So again, for the Ashkenazim here amongst us, right, we're looking at each other. Of course you do. Yeah, of course we do. That's our minhag. But what does the Gemara say about it? The answer is the Gemara has no mention of this whatsoever. The Gemara does not talk about whether or not each one of the kosos of the dal kosos retain its own independent bracha. And now the Rishonim argue this very issue. And one argument you can make, and many of the Rishonim make this argument, is that Magid is not a hefsek, meaning you're made a bar prik oven at Kiddush. You know there's going to be a second wine coming up, so you're not going to make a bar prik oven in the second cup of wine. And the for benching, so yeah, the kosher bracha after benching, you're going to have to make a bar prik oven, right? Because benching obviously is a hefsek. So the third cup of wine, you're going to make a bar prik oven. And what about the fourth cup of wine? Again, same issue. So many Rishonim are of the opinion that you're not going to make a bracha on the fourth cup of wine because you made a bracha right after benching. So many are of the opinion, Shulchan Aruch is of the opinion, that you make a bar prik oven after cups numbers 1 and 3, but not after cup and 2 and 4. But meanwhile, many Rishonim are of the opinion, and this is the minhag Ashkenaz, is that we make a bar prik oven after every one of the dal kosos. Our Gemara does not say that, but it certainly supports that idea. Our Gemara just said that every one of the dal kosos is a mitzvah ba'api nafshe, so certainly it would be supportive of the minhag Ashkenaz. Okay, this is a good place to stop. Let's quickly recap. Let's review the daf today. We went over machlokes tanaim as to whether or not children should be given a cup of wine, meaning 4 cups of wine, and participate in the mitzvah of dal kosos. Machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda as to whether or not they're obligated or not obligated. The Rashbam, which we cited, says that the children would be obligated because of the argument of Avhin Hayuba Oso Anes, which in of itself is really interesting how that would work out, and we don't see this elsewhere. Okay, according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, don't give the children wine as far as keeping them up and invested. So give them treats, right? Give them what used to be delicacies back in the good old days, roasted grains and nuts or candies nowadays. Good. That's the first machlokas we saw. Multiple brises that we saw on Kuf Tesamet Aleph that talks about what we should do to make sure that the children are asking questions and invested in the Seder. And the big line of that was chotfin es amatzos. We grabbed the matzos we gave 4 different interpretations of what that could possibly mean. And Kuf Tesamet Aleph, halfway down on the Amud, so we are given a couple lines in the Gemara regarding the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. And what exactly does that mean? Tosfos says that Bizman Beis Hamikdash ain Simcha Ela Bebasar. The Shamei Simcha is what provides it for us, the Simcha. But then post Chorban, that's the way Tosfos understands our Gemara. So ain Simcha Ela Beyain. So it comes with wine. But then Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, you gotta tailor make the Simcha. For men it's going to be wine, and for women it's going to be new clothing. Then the Gemara goes through how to measure a revius. The Gemara tries really hard to help us measure a revius using popular measuring cups of Tzipori and Tveria, giving us a linear measurement of the revius of 2 by 2 by 2.7 etzbaos to give us a linear measurement of a revius. Okay, So the Gemara really tried to help us. The base minimum mikvah is going to be one amma by one amma by three ammas. We touched on the idea that the height of a person's three ammas only goes up to the shoulder according to Tosfos, but does not include the head. Okay? And as far as you being totally submerged in the water, it's called displacement. Okay, good. The shulchan, the Gemara covered this really quickly. Is the shulchan, how's the shulchan going to fit into the mikvah? The dimensions of the shulchan are larger than the mikvah. The Gemara says, yeah, larger than a base minimum mikvah, but you had really large mikvahs, notably the Yamsha Shlomo. And finally, the last part of today's daf, the chachamim were misaking dalakosis on the Seder night, and meanwhile, that's two pair, and that's dangerous. And the Gemara's response is three responses to that. Number one, Lel Shimurim, that's Rav Nachman. Number two, the benching doesn't count because that's a kosher bracha, and a kosher bracha is not mitzarif l'ra'ah. So really, it's three plus one. That's Rav's answer. And Ravina's answer is not, no. Each one of the dalakosis is a mitzvah ba'apim nafshe. It's an independent mitzvah.